Hi everyone, I'm your host NG and welcome to the 20th episode of the podcast Sounds About Right, audiobooks to help us understand the world. And on this episode I was joined by Astrid and Chinny. They are the hosts of the hugely popular podcast titled It's a Continent, with mentions in The Guardian, BBC Radio and Podbible, to name a few. And they have recently published a book titled It's a Continent, Unraveling Africa's History One Country at a Time. The book highlights the key historical moments that have shaped each nation and contribute to its modern global position. And the book also aims to unravel misconceptions and celebrate Africa's rich and diverse history, touching on each of the 54 countries one at a time. To say it was a pleasure speaking to both of them is an understatement. Having the initial idea of creating the podcast to the opportunity of publishing their first book, it's a great achievement. So I was very happy to be able to discuss the book with them. I hope you enjoy the episode. Chinny and Astrid, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's really appreciated.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. Okay, so the first thing I actually wanted to mention is the title of the book is by no means misleading. You literally talk about all the countries in Africa, even the islands off the coast of Africa that some people forget to mention. So it will be interesting to know what influenced your decision regarding the topics you wanted to write about on each country. For instance, with Egypt, you didn't focus on the pyramids. With South Africa, you didn't focus on Nelson Mandela. So how did that go about?
I think it really stems from our podcast because we wanted to share stories and historical moments that people had never heard of before and haven't been flagged in school, especially with Egypt.
We did not want pyramids. That was a prerequisite for that particular chapter.
So it was interesting trying to find, okay, what's another way in which we can share some more history and insight into Egypt from a different perspective? And for that chapter, we cover Doris Shafiq, who was a feminist at the time. And so, you know, Egyptian African feminist, who knew? So so for us, we made a conscious decision throughout the book really to cover both colonization times, which obviously there's a lot of history and stuff documented around that time, but also focused on pre-colonialism, as well as also amplifying women's voices as well. So we try and fit in quite a bit in all 54 countries, but I think we managed it. I don't know.
Yeah, it was around picking something that we felt represented the country's history, or something that hasn't been covered before, something that's little known about particular countries. So in the example you gave with South Africa, we didn't want to cover Nelson Mandela because everyone knows about Nelson Mandela. So we then look at Steve Biko and his life and his contribution to what he did within South Africa. So yeah, it was picking up on little known stories, as well as amplifying, again, as Astrid said, the voices of those that often get marginalized within history.
Brilliant. When I was listening to the audiobook, actually, the chapter on Steve Biko, it cut me deep, you know.
I'm not gonna lie.
Because heard about him, but didn't know much about him, to be honest. And funnily enough, I think one of you guys mentioned that you did history and GCC, the other didn't, right?
Yeah.
I did it.
I'm now like my GCSE qualification more than 10 years ago.
Imagine.
I know, right?
I've not seen
still
it.
Still riding on that A-star.
Still riding on it, exactly. I did it as well, though. I did history and there was no mention of him. It was just the Nelson Mandela perspective as opposed to his. I wonder why that was the case, you know, but that's a story for another day. So, yeah, that chapter was, if there was a feeling you wanted the person to feel whilst reading or listening to it, I think it was definitely achieved, I'll be honest. But I also wanted to ask, what inspired the both of you in terms of putting the podcast and then the book and audiobook together?
I think we both felt a gap in our understanding of a kind of where we're both from. So I'm Congolese and Chinny's Nigerian. And we just wanted to learn more. You know, we're both pretty strong. Obviously, I don't have a qualification to prove it. Pretty strong with our British history. But we wanted to just learn more. We were like, actually, we don't know as much as we should, and actually being able to have conversations about African history and be able to deliver dates and names with as much conviction as I can do with British history. So yeah, it really started from us wanting to learn more, and we thought, you know what, I'm sure there's probably a couple of people out there who'd want to learn just as much as we do. And it's been really nice to see it resonate with so many people. Honestly, it's incredible to see.
Yeah, and also just even from a Pan-African perspective, like, I don't know much about Congolese history, Ghanaian history, Zambian history. And it's just like, wow, as Africans, we don't even know much about other countries. So it's really also about bringing that different perspective together, because unfortunately, because of the sort of relic of colonization, is that even within the countries, they are still learning a bit of a whitewashed curriculum. So yeah, it was really about bringing those stories to life.
Yeah. So Chinny, you mentioned that education is a seed which has led to the biases which we experience today. And I kind of wanted to know, how was your experience regarding education and history, as well as you, Astrid, as well after?
Yeah. So I just found that history, especially in primary school, and maybe to an extent secondary school, still to this day, it's like, okay, I'd have to dress up in like Tudor clothes or Victorian clothes. I'd have to then go to like one hall. And I was there thinking, what's going on? Like, this isn't really, like, yes, there were black people in those times, but it wasn't truly representative of my history or what my ancestors were doing at the time. And unfortunately, also, just some of the stories that I hear, so for example, the Biafran War, I was only hearing that from my family and no one else. But then I think as I realised that actually Britain had a lot of involvement within this conflict, so much so that there were protests on the street in London and Blue Peter was out here raising awareness about it. So the fact that Britain was so involved and the people were involved too, but it just doesn't even get a footnote. It just kind of is quite telling, because I think when I discovered that, I was like, what else have we got to hide? And the problem with education being a seed is that if people are taught a certain view on history that's not accurate, that then leads and forms biases and untrue perceptions about a whole range of different people. So then people now think that Africa is devoid of history because they were just never taught anything about the continent.
Yeah, I fully agree. Our parents do a fantastic job when you put your kids in the education system to ensure that they're ready for life and everything. But actually, it's a particular moment in time. It only gives a certain insight into the world. And you're then left to kind of, you know, if that gap is there, you're never going to fill it. You really have to do the work. But you really do have to do the work yourself, because it isn't delivered within education. And so I think it's just, yeah, super important for it to cover. And we had like a really interesting discussion a couple of weeks ago with a teacher who'd reached out to us. He was really identifying, it was driven actually by the students around how they were pushing them to really decolonize their curriculum. And so it's really nice to see that there are little snippets of this happening.
Changes.
Yeah. Really happening and being delivered and trying to find appropriate ways and how to kind of share that information with students, because it honestly surprised me massively to see some of the misconceptions that these kids held. So it's really important that we establish kind of African history and embed that into the curriculum as early as possible.
So what I'd also like to ask as well is your views on countries such as the UK, France, Belgium, Russia, and how they try to lay claims to present-day Djibouti, which some people probably wasn't aware of as well. So has your views and opinions on these countries changed whilst you were doing the podcast and writing a book too?
We knew that things would be, you know, it's not all cushy and stuff, but honestly, sometimes you're like, wow. For real, people aren't fully aware of this. How is this justifiable? And I think for me also, people seeing the link between why a lot of African nations find themselves in the situation they're in is as, and also the successes of Western nations is a result of colonization. And so this whole experience really, honestly, I thought my eyes were open, but it definitely, yeah, opens them up even more.
That's the thing, because false credit is given to these countries for, you know, their advancement and their development, thinking that it was the intellect or the creativity of the British, the French, the Germans. But actually, it was the exploitation of an entire continent, both them and other sort of colonizers within the league, as we call it. But unfortunately, it is an uncomfortable truth that their wealth is a direct correlation to the underdevelopment of the continent.
Absolutely. And when you think of an occasion such as the Berlin Conference in 1884, How much of an impact would you say that had in terms of the fate of African countries? When we talk about the disregard of ethnic groups that already existed in Africa, however, it seemed like the European nations created these new countries in Africa as a you have this land and I have that land sort of exercise.
It's the destabilization aspect, really, because sometimes it's very easy to say, why haven't these countries like just come together? But actually, it's a bit like if someone decided to draw a ring around France, Spain, Portugal and said, this is a country now, you guys are now going to speak a different language. When we put it within a European context, people are then like, oh, actually, yeah, that's weird. But actually, the same concept was applied in the continent. You had people that there was no such thing as Nigeria, like it's a social construct. And then we wonder why there's so many separatist movements in Nigeria right now. Historically, there were different ethnic groups with their own ethnic states based within those groups. So the kind of forcibly putting these people together and then getting them to speak a new language, it just lends itself to disruption and destabilization. And then someone has to then convince the people that, oh no, okay guys, now you're Zambian. And they're thinking, what's Zambian, you know? So it's just, I think one of the reasons we kind of have this ongoing project in the book is really around how did the continent get to its current position. It didn't just wake up in this state. All of these events have led to the continent as we see it today.
Yeah, that conference, honestly, to think that moment in time has shaped how we identify ourselves so much more. And also kind of in terms of when nations started to become independent, as you said, you know, Nigeria is a social construct. So then you have to now form an identity, right? You've been living in this way. Does it make sense to revert back? What does that even look like anymore? And I just feel like there's a lack of recognition, especially in kind of the history we're taught, lack of actually what the impact of doing that is. You've got millions of people that you're now going to have to bring together to come and feel like a nation. How do you do that when you've never had the longevity of history and time to really develop your story? And it's only, okay, now it's 1960 or whatever that a particular nation gets independence. You're a country. Go off and do, like, it just makes no sense. Like, honestly, doing this, the book, the podcast and the audiobook just makes you realize and appreciate it's actually understandable why a lot of these countries find themselves in this kind of state, because I would honestly have no idea how to approach it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is, yeah, there is no blueprint.
And to the countries who have leaders following independence and have tried to lead in a Pan-Africanist way and self-serving in a way that is not appeasing or being a puppet to the colonial power, they've been ousted or assassinated. So I suppose that brings a question whether many of these countries who have since had independence following World War II are truly independent and can truly say they are free today.
Well, that's the thing, because neocolonialism has its grip now. And the problem with, for example, Thomas Sankara and his ideas, his visions, that he was killed for his beliefs, you know, Patrice Lumumba and many other African leaders within the continent. So then you think, well, maybe you have to have a puppet, because otherwise you will be removed or ousted by the powers that be, which is quite a scary thought. But we've seen it happen, just not just in Africa, but within other places in the world as well, South American countries, Central American countries as well. But yeah, it's just a new form of colonization, because yes, they're independent, but they're not really, because you still have people controlling currency, who is president, and even backing leaders that are actually destroying their country.
And I do also think that lack of establishing a strong sense of identity and having the kind of time to establish that really has also lent itself to greed. Because if you don't identify and see someone as part of your community, you don't feel the need to help. And I do think has potentially kind of influenced a lot of the leaders that we have seen come through, just show no consideration for their citizens and really obliterate and take as much as they can from their countries.
And is it fair for me to say that in the book there are common themes? So one being the highlighted stories of women who were powerful and did great things. As you correctly say, it's a continent. Africa isn't a country. So I feel as though many people believe our cultures are all patriarchal and men are the heads of the households and etc. So its understanding and history is told from the perspective of men. Whereas in the book, you talk about the women of Ivory Coast and you also talk about Madame Joko. And another theme I'd also like to highlight is how in post-independence, some leaders since coming into power have led despot and kleptocratic governments and have been in power for, in some cases, 30 years. And lastly, I'd say a theme is the telling of alternative stories that people may not generally be aware of. Is that fair for me to say?
Yeah, definitely. I think we really made a conscious effort to try and, because we describe the book as very much a starting point for people to then go out and do more research and learn more about the history of different African nations. And so we really tried to pick moments in time and histories of specific countries that we felt would really engage the reader and actually be like, you know what? I had no idea about this. Let me go and do some digging. Because if the work hasn't been established, you know, from a curriculum perspective, you really then have to do the work now. And just how do we support someone and identify, okay, I have no idea, where do we begin? Let's get this book to starting point, and then let me go out there and read more, discover more, and really engage with even more literature.
Mm-hmm. What would you say was the most difficult country to write about?
Well, there were quite a few. For me, I think Cabo Verde, or Cape Verde as they also know, was quite a tough one, because the kind of theme is that the government at the time went to great lengths to erase African history, which meant that the process was even harder to then find history about the island, seeing as there was a concerted effort to remove the history and really whitewash it. So that was quite difficult, just to find information on it. It quite often would be the case where you see, okay, there was a movement, Funana music, which was like resistance music, and I thought, oh, this would be a great chapter about the arts and how that came together against colonization, but there was just nothing. It was like chasing like cold leads. But yeah, in the end there was a chapter on like that whole issue around the whitewashing of their history. But yeah, it was quite difficult to actually source the material in the first place.
And I definitely say pre-colonial, because we really tried to make sure there was like a good balance and explore those moments and stuff. But that was definitely a challenge in terms of just being able to find the information and pull that together.
Was the island actually inhabited before the Portuguese got there, or?
No, it wasn't. And it was given its name, like Cabo Verde, around like because it was green and, you know, it was beautiful. But actually, the exploitation of the land, because the Portuguese wanted to use it to basically just generate products that and crop that wasn't actually conducive to the environment, meant there were a lot of droughts, which meant that the island then lost its green for which it was named after in the first place. So yeah, it's just another example of just environmental degradation as a result of colonization, capitalism.
How important was it for you to tell the stories how it is, regardless of how it may make the countries come across? For instance, like how you mentioned the kingdom of Orungu, present-day Gabon, and how they essentially traded in slaves to enrich themselves.
It's important to hold some African leaders, for example, accountable for some of the damage that has been done. We didn't want to paint a picture of everything is all celebration, this is great, because if we look at it, it's actually not. It's a bit like, you know, when people go to Ghana or Lagos on holiday in December and they think that everything's great, but actually the reality is that there are a lot of people that are living under really difficult conditions. So yeah, we wanted to highlight that actually there is a side within African history and even just Africa in the present day that does need to be addressed as well, but we also are providing context as to why that's the case. So there is context as to why there seems to be a consistent way that leaders become despots, for example, from people that liberated their countries. There is some kind of pipeline to despotism and dictatorship. So we explain that, but we also do have to hold those people accountable too, because it's not enough to just say, okay, they became a dictator and then just leave it at that.
And I think that context is really important. What I like is we show that Africa's nation's history is very much tied to the West in terms of just where we are at the moment. I think sometimes it is kept quite separate, but actually the reasons why some African nations find themselves in the state that they're in today is a result of what happened. So it's really important to provide that context, as Chinny said, just to bring about that balance.
Astrid, you being from the DRC, I read that the wars that's going on there is one of the most underreported that's happening in the world. I suppose it's mainly because of its natural resources, such as coltan, for instance. But I wanted to ask you, how detrimental was the assassination of Patrice Lumumba to the country? Not to say that just because one person passes away, a country is done for, but in terms of how much of a hand Belgium had in the affairs of the country then, and how much it probably has to this day.
It had such a massive impact, not just in the DRC. You had a lot of these post-independence leaders who'd really helped to kind of say, yes, we're ready. We want to approach things differently. We really want to take our countries forward. But then all of a sudden, they were then assassinated. And I think a lot of these Western countries had a sense of they just couldn't let go. You know, and I think we emphasize this in the book around places like France, Belgium, just couldn't let go. And they didn't want to, you know, there was independence, but it was more semblance of independence. And so they still had these puppets in order to then maintain that. And talking of Patrice Lumumba, it's just only recently that his remains, I think just his tooth was returned.
Yes.
And you just think like, why is someone, A, kept that for this long? And just how he was murdered, you just think to have had that much hatred and wanted to maintain control of a nation so much so that you would do that to someone is just ridiculous to see. And I do think potentially those assassinations, if you see that, you can see it's a high risk role. How are you even going to be like, yes, I'm going to spearhead it? I don't want to say makes it understandable, but you kind of see, okay, potentially some people thought, you know what, if in doubt, join them, because if you're trying to fight them off, they're always going to have another puppet through. It's a challenge, and it would be interesting to have seen how African nations who had the likes of Patrice Lumumba would have actually fared now. Would it have been a different story? But I still think there's still an opportunity. It's not lost. It's about how do African nations really make the right decisions for them moving forward in order to really rebuild and kind of have a strong sense of true independence.
That was Astrid Nchinni, authors of the book It's a Continent, Unraveling Africa's History One Country at a Time. The book and audiobook is available now, which I do recommend you to pick up and read or give a listen to. You can and should also listen to their hugely popular podcast titled It's a Continent, and that's available on most platforms that you listen to your podcasts on. A big thanks once again to Astrid and Nchinni for coming on the podcast, and thank you for listening to this episode. Please do rate this episode and check out all the other previous ones if you haven't done already. And until then, I'll catch you on the next.